This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
2-9 the game.
Well, I mean, take it from me. Everyone is frustrated. No one is happy. You don't want to be 1-3-2 in league play. This is not the start that any of us envisioned. We will certainly point out evidence that Atlanta United continues to take steps in a positive direction as far as creating goal-scoring opportunities, but they aren't scoring goals, and they were not able to score enough today to overcome FC Dallas, a 2-1 loss. They give up a goal in the 6th minute. Dallas then, completely against the run of play, gets a second in the 84th minute. Joseph scores from the spot right at the death, but it was too late, and Atlanta United, last in MLS in goals scored coming into the weekend, will remain last in MLS in goals scored at the end of this weekend. That's what's got people frustrated, because you take a game like today, Jason. Jesse Gonzalez made some big, big saves. And we had one tweet. Someone said, I'm tired of hearing that a goalkeeper stole a match against Atlanta United. Well, Atlanta United had to put him in a position where he had to steal the match. So I think, I don't know where I necessarily fall on this. I'm frustrated. I'm sure you're frustrated too. There are a lot of positive things. They aren't scoring goals. That's where we are right now.
Jesse Gonzalez made a number of big saves. That's a fact. Atlanta United put 8 shots on goal, hit the post twice. That's a fact. Over 20 shots. Fact. Number of chances created. Far more than Dallas created. Fact. Game state has a lot to do with it. You give up a goal that early, things do change. Dallas was able to then ride out the fact, and they didn't sit back and really bunker until late in the match. They were trying to build out of the back through most of the first half. They just couldn't. They flat out could not play their game, but they adjusted, and they figured out how to get a result out of here. They get that second goal. Again, it's just you're stretched, you're throwing bodies forward because you've created chances, but you can't find a goal. There's a difference between being frustrated about the result and being frustrated about the play. And that's the thing that I want to stress. And this is my opinion. This is how I feel about it. And if you disagree, that's great. The way I see it is that this team has gotten better match after match after match in the regular season. The Cincinnati game was the worst game of the season Atlanta United played in MLS. The Philadelphia game was a little bit better, not that much better. The Columbus game wasn't that bad. You had conditions to deal with, but again, you created chances. You forced Zach Steffen to make a number of saves. You're doing everything you can do. New England, some of it is down to the way New England plays. Mm-hmm. That opened things up for Atlanta. They took advantage. They punished New England for playing the way they did. Dallas punished Atlanta for a mistake at midfield, took full advantage, and then Atlanta did everything you can do to score goals except actually score them. They weren't missing shots on goal. They put a number of shots on goal. Double digits when you include the shots off the post. When you get one goal out of that, that's not normal. That's a fact.
Yeah, and we're probably going to have a discussion this week using the expected goals stat again, which I know a lot of you listening to us, you aren't here for that right now. You don't want expected goals, you want goals. But, folks, I mean, there is statistical evidence right now to back up what Jason is telling you. Let's hold that thought. Frank DeBoer has made it to the podium downstairs. Let's go to that.
Yeah, to remind them, you know, we want to make, you know, progress, you know, want to make steps forward. You know, we did already against New England, and, you know, of course, you think always if you make progress, it's always 3 points, but today it was not like that. I think we really made progress today, how we played today. I said, you know, I cannot expect more from you, of course, not to concede goals, of course, but you create chances, you dominate, you're playing well, only I cannot make them. the goal. So you have to make them. And if you play like this, I think from the 30 games, you're going to win 28 or something. And one you lose like this today, and one you're going to draw, I think. So I think we made two steps forward today. Not with the result, of course. Very disappointed. But I was proud with intensity, how we played, you know, everything what we told, what we expected from Dallas. Yeah, we confronted them with a good defense or attack. And so... Yeah, they had two chances, maybe two and a half chance, and they scored two goals. And I don't know how many we had, but it's sometimes football is soccer is unfair, and today maybe it was for us. But you know that it's the case. That's why the game is so beautiful, and not always the best team wins. But again, you know, when we are going to play like this every with this intensity and the quality what we showed on the field. The points will come, that's for sure.
Coach, did midfield miss Eric Rometty? I mean, I know he's a very big piece of the puzzle. You have replacements there, and there was a lot of progress, I agree. But was he missed at all?
You know, Eric is a very important player for us. But, you know, I think with Barco on the number 10 position today and also afterwards when Peter Gonzalo came in, As a left winger, or sometimes they swapped, you know, from positions. He did great, and you know, then you need especially two players who are, you know, especially defensively thinking. And I think Jeff and Darlington did a great job, you know. And so we have very good midfielders, and that's nice to have as a coach to make difficult choices. And I think both. I did great. Eric, when he comes back, he can be great. So, and I always look to the opponent, you know, maybe which midfield is more suitable against this kind of opponent or player where he get play against. So it's good to have this kind of quality midfielders.
You discussed on Thursday your concern about their counterattack. Can you go through just... Was it breakdowns on your part, on Atlanta United's part, that led to their goals, or was it just plays made by Dallas?
No, it's also the quality of Dallas, that's for sure. If you see how they finish the goals, that's really quality, especially the second one, you know, how we made it in once. It was a really quality goal. Also, but if you always analyze, you know, the goals, you always see, hey, we could already avoid some of those passes or attacking or don't step in when you don't have to step in, or don't gamble, you know. I always say if you gamble defensively, you know, because if you attack offensively and you miss, then normally it's can be a very big risk. So it's very important that we don't allow this kind of goals. But sometimes you have always give the credit to an opponent. Because when I was a player or when I was a coach, when you play 95 minutes or more, the opponent get always one or two chances. No, and you saw it today. And sometimes you're lucky that they really punish you with that. And today it was like that.
In terms of chance creation and going forward, is this the best you've seen Atlanta United play? And was there anything missing outside of just the final product itself?
No, what I already said, you know, it was by far, I think, the best performance what we saw right now. I think this is what we want, you know, dominate, creating chances. And again, you know, I cannot address that, you know, again and again. You know, I cannot make them. They have to make it. And we will make goals, that's for sure. And... But if we play like this, we're going to win a lot of games.
Okay, so Frank DeBoer downstairs, and he says if you play 30 matches the way you played today, you probably win 28 of them, you draw one, and you lose one, and today was the one you lose. Is he right?
You win close to that. I mean, you know, we're pulling numbers out. You win the overwhelming majority if you play the way you did. You didn't concede very much from the run of play. You created a ton. You're going to win games that way. You didn't today. You can't let one result cloud the whole season. And that's something that, hey, when the results haven't gone your way, it's very easy to do that. But when you see some of the responses that the team is not creative and they're not getting anything from the run of play, like, you have to watch the way this one played out.
Right.
And again, I think there's progress. I think it's getting better. You can't have the individual breakdowns defensively that have happened at times. And if you go back and you look at the goals that have been conceded, so many have come from individual breakdowns defensively. One bad decision leads to a goal.
The man of the match brought to you by Heineken. The numbers on Barco are almost unbelievable today.
Best game in an Atlanta United kit. Not even close for Ezekiel Barco. So much better than last week, and last week was great.
Seven chances created, five shots, two on target, 86% passing accuracy, drew six fouls.
Five shots, two on target that forced saves, two off the bar, one off target. I mean, it's as good as you can get. It's Barco was outstanding, as Frank DeBoer said, playing as the 10. He created for others. He created for himself. He was dangerous on set pieces. He was dangerous from the run of play. He did everything you can ask. He was excellent tonight, and if he continues playing that way, he's a very top player in this league.
Is he your number 10 going forward now for Atlanta United? Because that's been a little bit of a discussion, how you're going to rotate this club, and has Barco, you don't want to use the term, has he won the job? I think that might be a little bit misleading, but going forward now, he's got to be the number 10, right?
I've said it, I think, since the opening of the season, that he should be that guy. He's the one that you want to get all of those touches in the final third. He's playing faster than he ever has. He's bringing more people into the ball, into the play. Barco's been excellent, and there's going to be games like last week where you think, okay, maybe I'm going to need something different because a number 10 might not be as effective in this match. But in general, I think Ezekiel Barco is your conductor for this team.
So Ezekiel Barco for the second straight week, the man of the match brought to you by Heineken. Final stats, 22 shots for Atlanta United tonight, a season high, eight of them on target. Dallas had eight shots, six on target. Possession was 71-29 Atlanta United. Atlanta United won 18 fouls and had 10 corners. Dallas won 12 fouls and had two corners. Atlanta United winning 53% of the duels. Atlanta United passing at 86%. Dallas passed at under 70% at 69.4. But it is Dallas coming out of here with the 2-1 win. They got the early goal and held on for dear life. We'll have more of the full-time report, including highlights, right after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. 2-1 FC Dallas over Atlanta United this afternoon in front of 43,351 supporters at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, most of them going home very frustrated, as I'm sure the players and technical staff and everyone associated with Atlanta United are. Very, very frustrating because they created a lot of chances today. They were the victim of a very good goalkeeping performance, but the problem remains Atlanta United has not been able to score goals this year, and that leads us into the highlights, and you get the feeling that when Atlanta United concedes first and early, it almost feels like a backbreaker the way this season has gone. Atlanta United, a little bit against the run of play, giving up a goal in the sixth minute to Jesus Ferreira. They play it up to the halfway line where it'll be controlled by Barrios. And now Barrios dribbles around Lorenowitz and Shea, streaks down the right wing, plays it to the penalty spot. Ferreira shot, score. Atlanta United concedes in the sixth minute. Beautiful goal in transition converted by Ferreira, his third goal of the year. The difference being conditions weren't in play today, but you had a mistake today, as you did against Columbus, that produced a scoring opportunity, and like the Crew 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago now, I guess, Dallas was able to convert.
Actually feels a lot like the goal you conceded against Cincinnati, where it's a very similar type of buildup. That was late in the match, not early, but it's the same type of mistake. You're stretched, you overcommit on a play at midfield, and your back line is left for dead after the pass, and that's what happened here. Leandro Gonzalez-Pires is stretched out, the back line stretched out. He goes in for a tackle in Dallas's half, doesn't win it, and then Barrios is able to turn, play a ball in that Robinson and Parkhurst can't get to. You could question Robinson maybe should have stepped up and put Ferreira in an offside position. Parkhurst is not winning that foot race with Jesus Ferreira, and they score against the run of play.
And from that point forward, Atlanta United continued to dominate possession, continued to create chances, really limited Dallas in anything they were able to put together through the remainder of the first half, for the first half hour or so in the second half. And then things really started to open up a little bit, and Dallas, again, against the run of play, got what turned out to be a back-breaking goal in the 84th minute from substitute Brian Acosta. Played up to Barrios with the flag staying down. It's going to roll and die in the near corner. Barrios plays it across. Score! Dallas against the run of play with the kill shot in the 84th minute. Brian Acosta. Now, Atlanta United, to their credit, and I think this is something that's going to get lost in the mix of the narrative of how this season has opened. Atlanta United does not quit on matches when they get down early and when they get down by multiple goals, because, again, they created a lot of chances after that goal. And if Joseph converts this sitter, well, then we're maybe talking about getting at least a draw out of this match today. 87th minute. Here's PT. Long ball ahead for Joseph at the penalty spot. Falls to him, shoots, and then missed! I mean, but by Joseph's standards, 99 times out of – it's not 9 out of 10 – it's 99 out of 100 he's going to convert that.
Yep. I mean, that's just – Joseph isn't going to be happy about that. But, again, you get back to the point, and this is something that I think people are getting very worked up about, and it's understandable. Look, everybody's frustrated because these are not the results anybody wants to see. But Joseph Martinez, you know, had a season last year that we've never seen in this league before. He misses a chance this season, and it doesn't make him a bad striker. It doesn't right. mean he should be on the bench.
Right.
It means he missed a goal that he should have converted on.
It also does not mean that Joseph's role is different. He's having trouble adjusting to a new... I've seen that narrative a lot, too, that Joseph is having trouble adjusting to new things he has to do, and that's why he's missing.
There is zero to do with that, because that chance is a Joseph Martinez chance that we've seen over and over and over again in Atlanta United colors. I mean, it's a chance that he has had many times, and it's a chance that he converts far more often than he doesn't. Joseph today was bracketed by two defenders a lot of the time, and this is something he talked about with Felipe Cardenas in The Athletic, that defenders are playing him differently this year. If he continues to do the same thing when he's being double-teamed a lot this season, that would be foolish, because then it's going to be even harder to get those chances. So he's trying to move around more. He's trying to draw defenders out. He's doing a pretty good job of it. And he's got to convert on the chances when he gets them.
Now,
flat out.
Atlanta United did get a goal at the death, a wacky sequence where Breck Shea was clipped by Carlos Guerrero inside the area.
Clipped is not the word I would use. Stomped on with studs on the ankle. It was really borderline red
right.
directly, and Guerrero, that was his first yellow of the night.
It was just inside the area. No foul was called. Then a member of the Atlanta United technical staff was dismissed. It was not a coach complaining that that's a red card. They went to VAR. They find a penalty. So they send Joseph Martinez to the penalty spot right at the death for the hot play of the match, brought to you by Scana. Joseph up to the ball, strikes it, and scores. And Atlanta United gets one back here right at the death. They could not get anything else in the final minute or so that Armando Villarreal allowed the match to go on, and Atlanta United takes a 2-1 loss to fall to 1-3-2 on 5 points. FC Dallas now 5-2-1 on 16 points. They have been a storyline in the West that not a lot of people are talking about. I want to point out now that Atlanta United, across all competitions this year, when conceding first, 0-5-1. When scoring first, 3-0-1. A number that probably won't surprise many of you and is close to the norm that you would see in soccer when
That's
you concede
close
first.
Close to the norm in the world, yeah. I mean, you score first, you're going to win far more often than you don't.
Yep.
And they're not scoring first enough like they have in the past.
Remember, Atlanta United wants to remind you that for each Atlanta United clean sheet this season, they donate $2,000 to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta. This year's donation currently $2,000, thanks to Brad Guzan's clean sheet last week in Foxborough. We will take your feedback on Twitter right after this. Last call, go ahead and tweet at us, at MikeConti929 and at Longshoe, and we'll continue with the full-time report right after this on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Atlanta United 2-1 losers to FC Dallas this afternoon. Everything is better when Atlanta United wins. To date, a total of $1,000 has been donated to Piedmont Healthcare as a not-for-profit hospital system. Piedmont Healthcare relies on the generosity of donors to expand healthcare services in our community. Atlanta United is proud to be a Piedmont donor. Let's go to your feedback on Twitter right now. Susan Laurie, I think I kind of summarized this tweet earlier, but I think she's right. I feel like I just watched a master class in the importance of scoring an early goal.
You have to score early in this league, and Atlanta United has not done that often enough. They did it against New England. They were able to see that out. They actually did it against Cincinnati, and they were unable to see that one out. That's it.
Abby Schrippman believes that Atlanta United can get more out of the right side going forward if you move Barco outside, Gressel back, and Parkey back to center back. The back line would be stronger and attack more productive, in her opinion.
Who do you drop at center back? And right now it would be Leandro Gonzalez-Pires.
Can't be Robinson.
You're not dropping Miles Robinson.
No.
So if you do that, you move the pieces around. I don't think Barco's as effective out wide, though. I really don't. I think you want him in the middle. I don't think he's the issue. I don't know what the complaint is about Barco today. There shouldn't be one outside of the fact he didn't score twice like he did last week.
Brett M. says, you can't blame this on Frank DeBoer. The team just couldn't capitalize on its chances. Even against a packed FCD defense, Atlanta United created a lot of good scoring chances. If we create that many chances in five games, we win four of them.
I mean, I said something that seemed to get a lot of people upset on social media at the beginning of the full-time report, where I said that the team is making progress. Let's talk about scoring chances. They had 22 shots, 8 on target today, 2 off the bar. The shots on target and off the bar today was more than it was against D.C., Cincinnati, and Philadelphia combined. They had more shots today than they've had all season. They had more shots today on target and off the bar than they've had all season.
Let me chime in on the other part of that tweet because look, we're seeing it. I mean, a lot of people are continuing to put all of this on the manager. And I would just say this, that you have to hold the players accountable sometimes for being unable to convert. And Frank DeBoer even said in his post-match comments today, look, I can't score the goals for them. They've got to go out and do it. And I know this is going to be a little bit uncomfortable. You've got to hold your players accountable if they aren't converting. It's not on the coach. It's like in a Falcons game. You know, people complain all the time about penalties. Well, that's a reflection on the coaching staff. No, it's not. The players are going out there committing penalties. You know, here in soccer, oh, it's a reflection on the manager when they are converting their scoring opportunities. No, it's not. You got to put the ball in the net. It's on you when it's on your foot.
Yeah, it's not Frank DeBoer's fault that you had that many shots and you didn't get one past Jesse Gonzalez today. I think Frank DeBoer made it clear, I believe it was after either the Monterey or the Philadelphia game, where he said he wanted to play four in the back. He didn't because he didn't have Franco Escobar. We've seen them go to four in the back in matches before that point and then from the Columbus game on, and they've looked better. I think he has moved the pieces around. I think he's gotten to know this group a little bit. Remember, he doesn't have 2 years like Tata Martino did at the end of last season, where Tata knew that he had a group that could handle changing their style completely going into the postseason, and they did. Frank DeBoer's got 3 months with this group, and he's getting to know who can do what and who can do what under pressure, what he can do to move guys around. You saw Michael Parkhurst today in a variety of roles, and I think he was generally effective in them. Mm-hmm. The one play that you can criticize Parkhurst on is he was maybe a step slow to react to a mistake at midfield, and Jesus Ferreira had him for speed.
That was on the first goal back in the 6th minute. Interesting one from Ricky Ricardo. He says, I want to be upset at the right things. So even though I was at the match, tell me what we did wrong.
The individual mistake from Gonzalez-Pires. You didn't close down John Nelson on the long ball to Barrios after you were chasing the game. What else did you do wrong outside of not scoring on the chances you created? That's honestly about it. There's not a lot else there.
Matt Dew says, building on that comment, is it time to sit LGP? He was responsible, he says, Matt Dew, he was responsible for both goals today, and has been at fault for others this season after mistakes.
He was responsible for the first one directly in my book. He was responsible for the goal against Cincinnati directly in my book. I think both were bad decisions at midfield in space where you don't need to be aggressive on a challenge, and you did, and you get your back line exposed. The second goal, it's a little less on him for me, because he had made a play in the attacking final third right before that, and he's chasing back, and he didn't get there in time on Brian Acosta. Not going to punish him as much on that. Then it's going to be Michael Parkhurst and Miles Robinson to me in the middle if you make that decision. LGP has not been at the form he has been in the last 2 years so far this year. He fought. He worked hard today. He got a yellow, potentially could have seen a red for a foul, and he did adjust, and he did play through it, and he did make things happen. He drew 7 fouls today, most of them from Dallas players trying to break up, you know, attacks being started, but he has not been at his level of quality. He hasn't been there this season.
More, I think, of a statement than a question from Sean Vigar. He says, I'm encouraged by the performance, but discouraged by the outcome. I think that's actually a really good way to summarize it,
100%.
By the way. Thank you for that, Sean. Now, besides the unreal goalkeeping and the lack of conversion in the final third, it was a good game, but what are we lacking right now, he wants to know.
The one that I would go to in the final third is you put in 18 crosses today, and I know we mentioned it at one point. If that's where the game is taking you, and I don't think it necessarily had to take you there today. I think you had opportunities to attack through the middle and maybe got a little, just rushed it a little bit at times, just play it out wide and see if Gressel and Brekshay can pick something out. Look, if you're going to have two center backs marking Joseph Martinez, you're not going to pick those out. It's going to be the cutback cross, one to the top of the 18 if you're going to make anything happen. 18 open play crosses is too much when only a handful of them are creating any real chances.
That was a problem last year, by the way, too. That's not unique to this
year. It's an easy fallback.
Right.
It's an easy fallback when teams clog the middle. But I thought Atlanta played through the middle pretty effectively today, and they should have stuck with it more.
Ed Million says, I'm going to go against the grain of many. With the exception of LGP, I saw a good bit of positive, chances upon chances. But Joseph hitting the woodwork and another keeper standing on his head was in the way. Pitty looked dangerous when he came on. Barca was good again. Miles was solid. Parky solid but not flashy. Hopefully the penalty starts to help Joseph over the yips because Ed thinks Joseph is pressing a little bit.
Could be. I mean, you score as many goals as Joseph Martinez did last year and you're not getting them this year. Yeah, you're going to press. That's his job. His job is to score goals. He's had a couple misses this year that have been surprising at points. Goal scorers go through that at times.
A couple more. John Neeson, why do you think there are so many individual mistakes right now?
See, I don't know if there's so many. The ones that you're making are glaring, and you're getting punished for them. I don't know. The Leandro Gonzalez-Pires, the two mistakes that we referenced, the one at midfield today, the one at midfield late against Cincinnati, two completely different situations in a match. But similar types of mistakes. It's over-committing. I don't know if it's pressing. I don't know if it's trying to do too much. I don't know if it's just a lack of confidence in the way the results have gone. But he knows better than to commit that challenge at midfield. That's a low-percentage challenge, and you don't need to leave your feet at that stage and be out of the play.
Alyssa Martin, tell me what you think about this. It's tiring to hear that this goalkeeper and that goalkeeper had his best performance of the season to explain our lack of goal production. She says we're putting shots in spots where they can make saves. Shots in the middle and near the ground will be saved.
The Cody Cropper performance last week, I would agree with. Shots on the ground, that's a little too simple without going into detail, but Cody Cropper last week made a number of saves that were right at him. That weren't difficult saves. Gonzalez today made multiple saves at full stretch, one with one hand off of a corner kick from Joseph Martinez, another one, I think it was a Barco shot, or no, it was a Martinez shot on a turn in the 18, that Gonzalez was at full stretch, both hands out, makes the save. Those are great saves. There's a difference between pedestrian saves and great saves. So let's go to the other direction. Brad Gazan had 6 shots on him. He made 4 saves. I think he made one good save. The others were pretty pedestrian saves. Zach Steffen made a number of big saves. Jesse Gonzalez made a number of big saves. Those are different. Those are big chances that you're making a save than just any save.
One more from Josh Airy. Now that we are creating more chances, we aren't finishing. Barco is close from outside the box, two times he hit the woodwork. But do we need better quality chances or improving finishing? Or is it just unlucky?
I think there is an unlucky element to it, and I know people hate that word when it comes to this game, but it's something that you do have to just understand that it does happen. You do need to create some better chances inside the 18, but I think you're doing that, and I think that's another bit of the progress that I feel like I'm seeing anyway, where you're creating more shots from inside the 18. Early on, you weren't doing that, and that's where Atlanta United scored the majority of their goals last season, was inside the 18. They didn't score many from outside the 18. This season, early on, they were kind of reduced to long-range shooting. You're not seeing as much of that in recent weeks. You're seeing some, which is fine. You're not seeing as much. You're creating more chances. Have to be more clinical in the final third. It's just something that you have to do. But when your chance, when your shot numbers are going from 9 to 10 to 12 to 16 to 19 to 22, it's progress. Your shots on target going from 2 to 4 to 2 to 5 to 8 to 8, it's progress. Got to finish them, though, but that is progress.
Okay, want to thank you all for your feedback and your questions on Twitter. We'll do it again next week following Atlanta United's match here at the Benz against Colorado, and we'll look ahead to that match right after this. If there is ever a perfect opponent in a perfect venue for Atlanta United right now, it might be Colorado coming into the Benz. We'll explain why right after this. 2-1 FC Dallas over Atlanta United this afternoon here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. All right, wrapping things up here on a gloomy Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, Atlanta United losing 2-1 to FC Dallas this afternoon. Is Colorado the right opponent at the right time in the right place for Atlanta United? Colorado got blown out today by Chicago 4-1. Jack Price got red carded late in that match, so he'll be suspended. He's one of their midfielders. Colorado is 0-6-2. With a minus 11 goal difference in six matches, bigger part in eight matches. Second worst team in the league right now. Only Portland has fewer points because they have one less draw. Are they the right team to see right now?
You want a preview of how that game's going to go?
Please.
Colorado will have a line of five and a line of four and one forward who might be a forward in name. No, it'll be Kai Kamara. He'll be up top. He'll stay up there. Because you'll play long to him, and he'll have to hold everything up and try to get help. But Colorado's going to come here to try to get out with a point, period. They're not going to come here to try to win. They're not going to play in a wide-open game, and Atlanta's going to have to break down an opponent that's going to sit and defend.
Are they skilled enough to do that and grind out a scoreless draw?
I don't think they are, but they're going to make it difficult just because of numbers behind the ball. Just the number of bodies behind the ball and the lack of a commitment to go forward. That's what's going to be difficult here next week. Atlanta's going to have to actually show a little bit of patience, which sounds like the wrong thing to do in a situation. Colorado's going to give you the ball. They're going to give you opportunities. They're not going to create very much. You need to be more secure in dealing with Kai Kamara. You don't need to give up set pieces where Kai Kamara can hurt you in the air. Outside of that, you need to be patient and you need to create chances. You need to move the ball faster. We saw some of that today. We also saw some periods where it was a little slow side to side. Atlanta has to be more patient in the final third and flat out just convert.
You also have the potential, not saying definite, but the potential that George Bello and Eric Rometty could be back for that match, the potential that Pity Martinez could be 90 minutes fit for that match, the potential that Franco Escobar could be 90 minutes fit for that match. So it could be a little bit of a different look, although I have to say, I don't know if I want to change. I know this sounds crazy because he didn't win today. I don't know if I want to change a whole lot with the lineup that they went with today. Maybe Bello for Shea, if that's possible.
Yes.
It would be hard to keep Escobar out if he's 90 minutes fit. But for the most part, I don't know if you want to tinker too much with what you've got right now.
If Bello's available, he plays because he can give you more going forward, and he just covers more ground. And you're going to have to do that because you're going to have to get numbers forward up against their defensive low block because that's how they're going to play it. That's why Escobar on the right side, again, he covers a lot of ground for you. Then you make the decision on, does Leandro Gonzalez-Perez need a night off, and do you play Michael Parkhurst in the middle with Miles Robinson? That's what you're down to. But, yes, I think if Escobar and Bello are able to give you 75 minutes, you start both of them.
Okay, it'll be another home match. We'll be on the air 5:30 a week from tonight for the Five Stripes Countdown here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game kickoff will be at 6 p.m. We'll have a full one-hour full-time report after the match. Certainly want to thank you for listening today. For our studio producer, Oren Romain, our engineer, Miller Pope, and for Jason Longshore, I'm Mike Conti. The final score again, FC Dallas, 2-1 winners over Atlanta United, and we will see you next week here on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.